You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Thank you for choosing our podcast. Our sponsors make it possible for us to keep bringing you new episodes. Please support them as they have some great deals just for you, our listeners. If you prefer to listen advert-free, you can. Simply find us on Patreon, where plans start as little as $2 a month. 25% of these proceeds are donated to the DOE Network, working to bring closure to international cold cases. For more information, follow the link in the show notes. Our cases have been researched using open source and archived materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Some parts are graphic in nature, and listener discretion is advised. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. Nestled amongst sun-drenched olive groves in central Portugal lies the historic village of Alcachofas. This tranquil town, with its rich history, is located about an hour 40-minute drive southeast of Lisbon. Whitewashed buildings with decorative stone streets and green patches of grass and trees make for a welcoming little town, which is home to about 800 people. Known for a treaty that was signed there in 1479 between Spain and Portugal, Alcachofas is renowned as a place of peace. Francisca Silva grew up in the region but had relocated to France. In August 2007, she was enjoying the blissful summer back in her hometown with her husband David. In Portugal, they were embraced by their loved ones, like every summer. Warm friendships were revisited as they shared delicious meals, and everything seemed just right. But all of that was about to change. When David returned from an afternoon of fishing on the evening of Tuesday, the 28th of August, he found his home in disarray. He called out to Francisca, but she did not answer. As he made his way from one room to the next, he saw that the entire house had been ransacked. Then he came upon his wife's mutilated body. 47-year-old Francisca was lying dead on the living room floor. It was obvious that she had suffered a violent death. Police rushed to the scene, and soon the whole town knew about the murder. It was an unprecedented event, and locals were shocked to the core. Alcachofas was the kind of place where everyone greeted each other, and people helped one another out. Knowing there was a killer among them was too much to fathom for the people who loved their village. Who was the monster that shattered the peace and killed one of their own in such a brutal fashion? Francisca Silva was born in 1960 and was seen as a respectable, kind, and hardworking woman. She was originally from the small, rural town of Alcachofas. It was not a wealthy region, and Francisca was raised to live off the land. Everyone in her community worked really hard planting and harvesting their fields. This instilled a strong work ethic in the young Francisca, but she knew her future was elsewhere. Like thousands of Portuguese people, she yearned for a life away from a country broken down after years of dictatorship. Hoping to find a better life in France, Francisca emigrated when she was in her late teens. When she left, she had no definitive plans and had to keep an open mind as to what she would do for a living. Soon, after arriving in Paris, she found a job as a housekeeper to a wealthy French retiree. David Silva also emigrated from Portugal to France for the same exact reasons as Francisca. He was a very determined and hardworking person who started out working in an amusement park. David and Francisca met each other in France, and he fell in love right away. Francisca was considered a beautiful woman, but David knew that there was more to her. Both of them valued hard work, honesty, and reliability, and sharing these traits made them admire each other even more. They got married in 1978 and had two sons together. By the time their sons were grown up, David had his own business in Paris, selling fireplaces, chimneys, garden statues, and barbecues. Even though it was a small business, this was a great accomplishment, since he started from scratch, without any financial aid or connections. Soon, he was well respected in France, as he had been in Portugal. He was in a position to employ his youngest son as well as some casual workers. Francisca also helped wherever she could and did not mind the fact that David ran the business from their home. Francisca had worked for the same employer. Over the years, the two women formed a special bond, and the wealthy widow considered Francisca to be as close as family. So much so that when she passed away in January 2006, she included Francisca in her will. This generous inheritance changed Francisca and David's lives forever. She was no longer a servant, but the owner of four properties, among them a studio in Paris. This windfall came as a big surprise to Francisca, as she never even knew she was a beneficiary of the will. David kept his business going strong, and Francisca managed her new property portfolio. Their newfound wealth freed them up to take more leave, and every summer, they made their way back home to Portugal for an extended vacation. In Portugal, August is known as the month of emigrants, seeing as most people who left tend to come back for the peak of summer. Just like any other year, the Silva family arrived in Portugal at the beginning of August 2007. That summer was perhaps more memorable than others, because their 24-year-old son was getting married. Arriving from France, their first stop was Chaves, for the family wedding which took place on August the 4th. After their son's nuptials, David and Francisca returned to their holiday home in Ocachevas, where they stayed for a week. On the 13th, they joined the newlyweds on vacation in the Algarve. They stayed at a campsite in Ferragudo, one of the most beautiful seaside villages in the region. Everyone noticed that David enjoyed the camping vacation. Usually, he would stress about his business and struggle to unwind. But this time was different. He was in no rush to go back to France, and they stayed in Ferragudo until the 23rd of August. When David and Francisca arrived back in Ocachevas, Francisca sadly learned that a family member had passed away. The funeral was planned for the 28th, so they agreed to stay in Portugal till then. On the day of the funeral, David and Francisca woke up around 6 a.m. David went outside to place floral arrangements for the funeral out in the sun. Back inside, they got ready and then left to pick up three other family members. The funeral was held at Foros de Salvatera, a 1.5-hour drive away. It ended around 11:30 a.m., and David declined a lunch invitation, as he had promised to take Francisca's uncle fishing for the afternoon back in Ocachevas. When they arrived home at 1:30 p.m., David was in a rush and told Francisca he was running late. He had a quick lunch, changed his clothes, collected his fishing equipment, and left in a hurry to meet her uncle. It was around 7 p.m. that David returned home to find that it had been burglarized. All of the cabinet doors and drawers were opened, and belongings were strewn all around. At first, he couldn't find Francisca, but then made the tragic discovery. Francisca's lifeless body was lying on the living room floor, with a towel covering her face. David ran outside, screaming that his wife had been killed and pleaded for help. Neighbors rushed to his aid and called the police and an ambulance. When paramedics arrived, they declared Francisca dead. David was so distraught, a neighbor saw him wet himself. First responders noticed David's condition and called in a psychologist to assist. David was in trauma and trying his best to come to terms with his wife's murder. Police examined the scene and ruled that it was a burglary gone wrong. Their first guess was that Francisca surprised the intruder and that he killed her before she could do anything to stop him. Local police realized they did not have the resources to handle a big case like this and called in the special police unit that deals specifically with homicide cases. The unit acted fast, securing the location, and performed a first-glance examination of the scene. There were no signs of forced entry, no windows were broken, and the front door had not been tampered with. At the scene, a forensic investigator noticed ants coming out of Francisca's mouth, which indicated that a fair amount of time had passed since she died. Police did not need to wait for forensic results to know that something was amiss. The house was turned upside down. Every single drawer and door was open. The drawers were open neatly, almost aligned, and the contents were still neat and tidy, unsearched. A display cabinet's glass door had been opened, even though nothing was taken. Why open a glass door if one can see everything inside? As for the rest of the house, nothing else seemed to be missing. Even the most valuable items were still there. The offender, or offenders, had time to kill the victim and rummage through everything, yet didn't take anything. Except, of course, Francisca and David's green Peugeot 406. The fact was that everything seemed to have been opened symmetrically was intriguing. In the commission of a burglary, criminals typically try to get in and out as quickly as possible, especially if the burglary escalated to murder. It was quite obvious that the burglary had been staged, which made police conclude that murder was the reason for the break-in. The supposed robbery indicated that the killer was not after money or valuables. He only wanted to end Francisca's life. This was a premeditated murder. After the forensic analysis, the police were able to determine that the assassin wore gloves, as there were no fingerprints at the scene. They were able to isolate a DNA profile that did not belong to either of the Silvas, their family, or friends. From the start, police had their suspicions about David Silva. Like any murder investigation, investigators look at those closest to the victim first. David was questioned by police on the night of the murder. It was a short interrogation as he had a solid alibi. He was fishing with Francisca's uncle, which placed him far away from the crime scene at the time the murder occurred. He also assured investigators that his marriage to Francisca was happy and healthy. The next day, the police began to question the Silva's neighbors and other people of Ocosavash. They asked if the locals knew anything about the crime or if they had anything odd happening on the afternoon of the murder. In a small and intimate village like Ocosavash, everyone knew everyone. So when a foreigner who didn't speak a word of Portuguese showed up asking for directions, they all took notice. He had a distinct French accent. Independently, countless local witnesses informed police of a 6-foot-tall man with a ponytail and mirrored sunglasses. He was seen arriving by bus in Ocosavash the previous day. He had a beer on the veranda of a cafe and then moved across to another restaurant for dinner. The waitress saw him wiping the glass and cutlery clean after his meal. She found this strange. In hindsight, police had to wonder if he was trying to remove all physical evidence of himself visiting the town. Some people claim that they also saw this man driving Francisca's car around 4:15 p.m. All the witnesses described the exact same man, and police felt there was a strong chance the man knew something about the murder. They caught a lucky break a few days later, when Francisca's Peugeot was found in Madrid, Spain. But it didn't yield much information, seeing as the car had been abandoned and the tall foreigner was nowhere to be found. Back in Ocosavash, the community mourned Francisca's death with David. David cried openly and told friends and relatives that he was devastated and that he had no reason to keep on living. Shortly after the funeral, David returned to his Saint-Emarin home on the outskirts of Paris. Because there was no evidence linking David to the murder, he was granted permission to leave Portugal. Even though the unidentified foreigner could have been a feasible suspect, investigators had an uneasy feeling about David Silva. His behavior, after discovering his wife's body, was strange. Usually, once an ambulance arrives, the spouse of an injured person wants to know what is happening, or if there is something they can do to revive the victim. But David accepted the fact that his wife was dead rather swiftly, and instead of going through the initial shock reaction of denial, he made it all about himself. How shocked he was, how terrible it was for him. Also, the fishing excursion with Francisca's uncle was strange. He was an elderly man and was not very keen to go out with David. However, because David kept pestering him about it, he said he would go. And then David did not accept an invitation to lunch after the funeral, insisting that he had to take the uncle fishing. The only logical explanation for his behavior was that he wanted to ensure Francisca was at home that afternoon. As for himself, was the fishing outing David's way of ensuring an alibi for the entire afternoon? When he arrived back, he noticed the car was gone. Instead of going inside, he walked around the village, asking people if they had seen Francisca. He told everyone he spoke to that he had been fishing all afternoon and came home to see the car was gone. He spent an hour and a half walking around the village, supposedly looking for his wife, before finally going home. He made sure everyone knew he had not been home the entire afternoon. It was only a hunch, shared by detectives, that David knew more than he was letting on. Police decided to not write him off as a person of interest and keep an eye on him. As soon as David arrived back in France, he put the house he shared with Francisca up for sale. He told neighbors it was too painful to be there without her, and he had no other choice than to sell. He also sold his business and said he wanted to open a Portuguese restaurant. In the first week of October, police in Paris learned that a local man, 43-year-old Dominique Collinet, had gone missing. He was known to police, as he had had some minor clashes with the law in the past. His teenage son reported him missing, and police tried to assure 15-year-old Jimmy that his dad would surely return soon. When there was still no sign of Dominique after a couple of weeks, his son paid another visit to his local police station. This time, he revealed a dark secret his father had told him. According to Jimmy, David Silva had promised his dad a large sum of money if he would kill Francisca. Dominique left France for Portugal on the 25th of August and returned a couple of days later. Dominique's brother-in-law, Hermani Nasser, also informed French authorities that Dominique told him that he was going to Portugal and that he was going to make a quick 35,000 euros. He alluded to the fact that he was going to do a job for David Silva. The last time he saw him back in Paris, he was going to collect his money. French police contacted their Portuguese counterparts to inquire about Francisca Silva's murder. When they confirmed the murder had taken place on August 28th, French police realized Dominique Collinet's son could have been right. They told Portuguese investigators about Dominique's disappearance, and everyone began to connect the dots. Dominique had done some casual work for David's fireplace business in the past. It was plausible that the men were in cahoots in some way or another. But where was Dominique? French police took David Silva in for questioning. He denied the accusation of hiring Dominique to kill his wife. During the interrogation, he cried and referred to his wife as his angel. Although police thought it to be crocodile tears, they had no solid evidence against David and had to let him go. As soon as he was out, clearly nervous about being in police crosshairs, he decided to leave France and set off to his hometown of Bombeiral in Portugal. What David didn't know was that the Portuguese authorities were still considering him a suspect in the murder of his wife. So while he thought he was evading French police, he placed himself right back under the radar of Portuguese police. Even before David was back in Portugal, police had tapped his paternal uncle, José Luis's phone, and were monitoring their conversations. It was clear that David was close to his uncle, and they spoke often. Toward the end of October, the conversations had become rather strange. During one bizarre call, David's dialogue sounded more like code than conversation. He said, "I'm going to send a malfunctioning chimney to Portugal. You can dig a hole and you can bury it down there." A red flag was raised immediately. Firstly, chimneys don't typically malfunction. And if it did, why would a businessman pay a shipment fee just so a family member could bury it in another country? David continued the conversation saying, "I'm going to finish my business. After that, you can include my father." The police knew something was up with the recently bereaved husband. To recap, he was sending a faulty chimney from France to Portugal. His uncle had to bury it, and then had to contact David's father. None of what he said made any sense. The police contacted the shipping company and received an interesting piece of information. David Silva had the package transported on the 1st of November and had arranged to collect it himself. When the package arrived in Portugal, the police made sure to be listening and on all phone calls between David, his uncle, and his father. The three men had arranged to meet, but the police didn't know when or where. At this point, investigators decided to question David's father. The elderly Silva was uncomfortable and obviously stressed. Police used the opportunity to pressure David's father to come clean. They assured him that if he cooperated, it would bode better for him and his son. After some consideration, David's father decided to reveal the truth. He said that his son had committed a crime, and he only agreed to help him because David said to him, "Dad, I really need your help. This man, Dominique Collinet, is the one who murdered Francisca. I had to kill him, and now I need help hiding the body." Investigators were stunned. David's dad told them exactly how David had packaged the body and pointed them to the exact location where they had buried Dominique Collinet. David created the transportable tomb to be the exact length of the body and then decorated it with stones so that it looked like a chimney for a fireplace. The body was wrapped with mortar and an iron mesh to keep the shell intact during the trip. David, his uncle, and his father then set out to bury the body in the pine forest on their family's property in Bombeiral. At the location, they removed the body from the coffin and covered it with quicklime, whitewashing it so as to conceal the putrid odor of decomposition. Then they buried it. With his father's confession, it was time for David to answer some questions. As soon as the interrogation commenced, David confessed to killing Dominique. He claimed that he did it only because he discovered that Dominique had killed his wife, and he wanted to avenge her murder. Police documented the confession, but suspected that there was more to the story. Meanwhile, the forensics team was already examining the burial site where Dominique was laid to rest. Dominique's DNA was a match for the profile found in Francisca's house, and the Silva's car found in Madrid. Police publicly confirmed that Dominique Collinet was the person who murdered Francisca Silva. A post-mortem examination of Dominique's body found two bullet holes in the back of his head. There were also injuries to the rest of his body, but most of it was inflicted after Dominique had perished, most likely when he was placed into the concrete casket that would transport him to Portugal. Joining forces with Portuguese police, French authorities set out to determine where Dominique was murdered. Dominique's family members told investigators that on October 18th, Dominique left his house. He said he was on his way to collect some money. Some street surveillance cameras caught Dominique's car parked close by a gas station. Investigators were able to confirm that he was killed at La Ferté-sous-Jouarre, about an hour's drive east of downtown Paris. They were also able to determine that the corpse was transported from there to David Silva's house. French forensic experts searched David's house, where they discovered that a section of the floor had been removed. Despite the attempt to destroy evidence, they were able to retrieve traces of Dominique Collinet's DNA. Investigators focused all their attentions on David Silva and found that he was not the loyal and loving husband he claimed to have been. At the time of his wife's murder, he had been having an affair with a woman named Clorinda for 3 years. The 36-year-old had met David through his work. David and Clorinda had a son, also named David, and was born the previous year. There was no indication that Francisca knew about the other woman and child in her husband's life. One of Clorinda's close friends, Isabel Mendez, confirmed to police that Francisca was unaware of the affair. David had reportedly given Clorinda an engagement ring and was ready to start a new life with her. The friend also told police that shortly before Francisca's death, David had told Clorinda he was going to end his marriage for good, the easy way or the hard way. The expression he used was a common Portuguese phrase that is mostly used metaphorically. It was left open to interpretation. Portuguese authorities discovered that, like David and Francisca, Clorinda spent the month in Portugal too. She even met Dominique Collinet in Fatima. The more investigators learned about Clorinda, they realized that she was eager to have Francisca out of the way. She wanted to enjoy the good life with David, and some of her acquaintances even referred to her as a gold digger. Friends informed police that Clorinda constantly pressured David to leave his wife so they could get married and be together as a family. In 2007, with his grown son getting married and set to start a family on his own, David was ready to end his marriage to Francisca. Portuguese police uncovered the fact that, at the beginning of 2007, David told Francisca that he wanted a divorce. He did not tell her about his affair and his baby, and only told her that he was tired of the way things were between them. Francisca thought her 49-year-old husband was experiencing a midlife crisis and refused to dissolve their marriage. Francisca was determined and vowed to work things out with David. This was not what David wanted to hear. And that is when the diabolical plan to kill his wife was born. At the beginning of July, David handed his lover an envelope and asked her to give it to Dominique Collinet when he arrived in Portugal at the end of August. Phone records showed several phone calls between David Silva and Dominique Collinet in the month of July. Although it was impossible to prove, police theorized that the men discussed logistics regarding Francisca's murder. In the days before the Silvas left for Portugal, David acquired 8 burner phones, solely for undetectable communication between himself and Dominique. On the 3rd of August, Dominique purchased a bus ticket to Fatima, Portugal, for August 25th. He used his cousin's name, Johnny Turbin, so he could travel to Portugal without his real identity being documented. Arriving in Portugal, he went to meet Clorinda, and she gave him the envelope that had all the information he needed to make his way to Alcachofas. The plan was for Dominique to use a disguise. David supplied the items, which included a ponytail wig, hair gel to use on the wig, and mirrored sunglasses. David assured him that by using the disguise, he would fit right in, and no one would take any notice of him. However, being familiar with the small town of Alcachofas, David knew all too well that Dominique would stand out like a sore thumb. When Dominique arrived at Alcachofas on the 27th, he walked freely through the village. David had given him an itinerary of sorts, instructing Dominique exactly where to eat and stay, all places where he knew the foreigner would be noticed. And it paid off. After the murder, locals all reported a man with a ponytail and mirrored sunglasses to police. Dominique floated around town, waiting for new instructions from David, David used one of his burner phones to call Dominique and told him about the funeral on the 28th. Dominique arrived at the Silva home at 6 a.m. on the morning of the funeral, and when David went outside with his flower arrangements, David snuck him inside without Francisca noticing. Dominique hid under a bed in the guest room and waited for them to leave. After the funeral, David was anxious to return to Okashevash as soon as possible. When they returned home, Dominique was still hiding. David told him that he would speak loudly when he left, saying, "Okay, I'm on my way to go fishing." That was the signal for Dominique to commence the murder plot. David left on his fishing outing at 3 p.m. Francisca was attacked soon after, without warning. She tried her best to defend herself, but her killer was too strong and too determined. With Francisca deceased, Dominique went around the house, staging the robbery as he had been instructed by David. He then left the house and drove off with Francisca's car. Villagers saw him in the car, and he was heading to Viana do Alentejo. David played his part, ensuring Dominique had enough time to complete his mission. He returned around nightfall to convince neighbors of his state of severe shock and sudden grief. The staged event ticked by like a play, courtesy of playwright David Silva. In the end, everyone in Okashevash remembered that David had gone fishing that afternoon, and that there was a foreigner with a ponytail and sunglasses in town. And this is the narrative that was repeated by each and every one in the village that day. As planned, Dominique drove Francisca's car to Madrid, left it there, and returned to France by air. This was the full assignment for Dominique. His mission was complete. He was ready and waiting to collect 35,000 euros as promised by David Silva. After 2 months, David returned to France, and Dominique was eager to meet with him. Multiple phone calls were made to David, all lasting only a couple of seconds. It became clear that David never intended to pay his wife's killer. If he eliminated Dominique, there would be no loose ends, and no one would ever be able to trace the murder back to David. In David's mind, once he paid Dominique, the contract killer could blackmail him for the rest of his life. Killing Dominique was the only way forward. Also, David did not actually have the money. In fact, he only had 3,000 euros in the bank. The inherited properties were all in Francisca's name, and David had no claim to her assets. That is, unless she passed away. He knew this before hiring Dominique to kill his wife, that he did not have the 35,000 euros, making Dominique's eventual murder every bit as premeditated as Francisca's. After many phone calls to and fro, David agreed to meet with Dominique, promising him that he had the money. When Dominique arrived at La Ferre-sous-Jouarre, David shot him point blank in the head, firing 2 shots. He concealed the body in the chimney box and convinced his uncle and father to help him bury Dominique's remains. Thanks to a swift investigation and seamless cooperation between Portuguese and French police, the case was wrapped up within 5 months. Soon after his arrival in Portugal, David Silva was arrested. At that time, the police had gathered sufficient evidence to take the case to trial, and it was clear that David would spend most of his life behind bars. The two police forces decided that, although Dominique Colonnet was murdered in France, it would be best for Silva to be prosecuted in Portugal, where the first murder, that of his wife, took place. David Silva's trial began in May 2009, in Évora, the district court for the region of Alentejo. One of his sons testified, claiming that his father had confessed to killing Dominique Colonnet. David allegedly said that he shot Dominique to avenge the death of Francisca. David testified in his own defense and denied hiring Dominique to kill his wife. David presented himself as a victim and cried throughout his testimony, referring to his murdered wife as Princess. He insisted that he only killed the French laborer as an act of revenge. According to David, he thought Dominique had gone to their home to commit a burglary, but then things must have gone wrong. If one were to take a moment to consider this logically, why would Dominique, with no ties to Portugal, not able to speak the language, make a 7-hour journey to the small town of Okashevash to specifically rob his employer's house, but not take anything other than the car and, of course, the life of Francisca? What did he have to gain? If he was desperate to steal a car, why not do that in France? A witness told the court that Dominique, although known to police, had never murdered anyone before. After killing Francisca, He allegedly told the witness that he never knew it would be so easy to end someone's life. He was going to shoot her with a pistol, but it had jammed, and he ended up completing the job using his bare hands. Once Francisca had lost consciousness, he used a wet towel to wipe her face, hoping to erase any transfer evidence. He threw the towel over her face and left. David's mistress, Clorinda's friend Isabel Mendez, testified that Clorinda had approached her and asked if she could buy a specific kind of contraceptive pill online. She wanted to mix it with other substances and give it to David so he could give it to Francisca. This cocktail was supposed to kill her and make it appear to have been a heart attack. However, a couple of days later, Clorinda told her friend to forget about the pills because David had made alternative arrangements. Francisca's death would look like an accident. Isabel Mendez thought her friend was just running her mouth, but when she learned that David had been arrested, she came forward to tell police what she knew. If it had not been for Isabel, no one would ever have known about Clorinda or David's double life, which was most likely the strongest motive for wanting to kill his wife. In January of 2008, David Silva was sentenced to 25 years in prison for murdering his wife and Dominique and concealing a corpse. He received the highest possible penalty in Portugal. It was concluded that the motive behind this crime was to get rid of Francisca because she would not accept the divorce. David's mistress pressured him to make their relationship official, and he took action. David begged to be acquitted of his wife's murder and pardoned for killing her murderer because he was emotional and in despair. His request was denied. His uncle and father were charged with desecration of the corpse. They were each handed a fine, as the judge believed they had no idea about the greater scheme and that David was behind the murder of his own wife. The judge alluded to the fact that as a father, if he were in the same position, he probably would have done the same. David's lover Clorinda was not prosecuted because the only evidence of her involvement in the murder plot was the testimony of her friend. Once David was behind bars, close relatives said that he was deeply ashamed of his affair, but the family was divided. Others felt that David knew a divorce from Francisca would have left him penniless. He killed her so he could take her money and start over with his new family. For the most part, David Silva almost committed the perfect crime. If it had not been for Dominique's son, who came clean to police about his father's criminal act, Francisca's murder would have remained unsolved, and Dominique's disappearance would have remained a mystery. Without young Jimmy, nothing would have linked the two victims and the puppet master together. If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also visit and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/evidencelockerpodcast to see more about today's case. If you like our podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcast or wherever you are listening right now. This was The Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.